Welcome to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast here on Cleveland.com. I'm Joe Noga, joined once again from Goodyear, Arizona by Paul Hoynes, our Tribe beat writer. Paul, weather any better out there today?
Well, you know, Joe, the sun is out. The sky is blue, but it's a little still a little chilly, but it's nice. It's a good brisk desert air, I guess.
Well, it's looking sunny for Carlos Torres, who signed a non-roster minor league deal for the Indians, reliever, most recently pitched with the Brewers. What can you tell us about Carlos Torres and his chances for making the squad?
Yeah, he passed his physical today. He's a guy, kind of a heavy-duty reliever. He pitched 82 innings for the Brewers in 2016, through 72 innings last year. He can pitch in a variety of roles, and he's not Brian Shaw, but he's at least durable enough to kind of fill some innings, fill some holes in this bullpen, and he's got a chance to win the seventh and last spot in the pen.
Who are some other names that he would be competing with for that spot? Are there any young guys looking to get in there, or is it pretty much just between him and any veterans?
Well, I think whoever doesn't win the last two spots in the rotation, you've got Ryan Merritt, Josh Tomlin, Clevinger, maybe Danny Salazar if he's healthy enough. You've also got, veteran guys. So there's a guy named Ramirez in here, and Alexei Gondo, who's pitched a lot in the big leagues. So those are the kind of guys he'll be competing against.
You mentioned Danny Salazar's health. You got some injury updates today. Most notably, we found out that Jason Kipnis has a bit of a tweak in his back.
Yeah, I think Kipnis told me he's probably going to miss. Maybe he won't play Friday in their spring training opener. He could miss Saturday as well. But but Francona said he'll probably be back in there Sunday. He said Kipnis said he just kind of overdid it. He's been here since February 7th. He's been hitting in the cages. He said he's been hitting in the cages 2 hours a day. Then he'd go and work out. And finally his body said, hey, you may need a break. So I don't think it's anything serious. He doesn't think it's anything serious. And he thinks he could be back in there Saturday. So I think, Jason was just worried about getting beat up on Twitter again because, following last season. So he knows that's coming.
Well, with Kipnis, it's usually been hamstrings or shoulders or things like that. This is the first we've really heard of a back situation with him, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's all, the hip bone is connected to the thigh bone, all that kind of stuff. Everything's connected, but I think this is just, kind of an issue of overwork, just his body telling him to ease off the gas pedal. But I think he said his shoulder feels fine, his hamstrings are good, and he's ready to go as soon as he gets his back thing cleared up.
There was you mentioned Danny Salazar. Where's his progression right now? Is he moving along?
Yeah, Salazar's playing long toss. He's throwing weighted balls at 60, 90, 70. 60, 75, 90 feet. But he's still behind Joe, so he hasn't thrown off the mound yet. He hasn't thrown BP yet, live BP yet, and the games start tomorrow. So the train is leaving the station for as far as Salazar is concerned. I don't know if he's going to be able to play enough catch up here to start the season on time. With the season starting early this year on March 29th. So that remains to be seen, but I think the odds are right now he'd probably start the year on the DL.
Speaking of artificial deadlines and, not making too much of that, you guys got a chance to interview Michael Brantley today as well, but Brantley sort of turned the tables on you.
Yeah, we went up to him and, it seems like every spring we're talking about Brantley. Is he going to be ready for opening day? Is he going to be able to run? How's his shoulder? How's his ankle? So instead of us asking the questions, he not only asked the questions, but answered them as well. So that was kind of funny. It was like, Crash Davis and Nuke LaLoosh. You know, Crash Davis giving Nuke LaLoosh his interview lessons on the bus in the minors. And that's what it kind of reminded me of, that Brantley has been well schooled in cliches.
You got to learn. You got to work on your cliches. You got to know them. You got to love them.
That's right. I'm just here to help the team.
Speaking of here to help the team, and pretty much a source of frustration, I think on both ends right now, Brandon Guyer's wrist. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, this is the guy that he had the surgery in October during the playoffs. On his left wrist, he hurt it twice, I think, during the season. So he had the surgery. You know, he was going to get checked out Thursday today to see if he could start swinging the bat, but he hurt it 2 days ago in the outfield, I think just catching, I don't know if it was throwing or catching, but he hurt it, he felt a tweak again, and they took an MRI. He was examined today. He's going to be shut down for a few days, and they'll start to the ramp him back up next week. So, this is another guy that, you just don't know if he's going to be ready for opening day. But I think they want to take it slow. You know, he played so well for him 2 years ago as a platoon guy with Chisenhall in right field and they missed him last year. They missed that element on their offense. So I don't think they're going to take too many chances with him. They want him to get ready. They want him to, be full, be as close to 100% as he can when he returns to, the Indians.
Yeah, it just sort of seems it's been more than a year now that he's sort of been like a lost or a missing piece for this lineup. And, just to get him back in there and knowing that the outfield is so left-hand heavy right now without knowing where Roger Davis and Melvin Upton fit in. The guys that they have are all left-handed, and Brandon Guyer would definitely be a right-handed bat that could, do well against right-handed pitchers as he's proven in the past.
Yeah, definitely. That's what they need, and, that's what they want him to do, and that's what he's done throughout his whole career. So, they just need him to get healthy and be able to swing the bat like they know he can.
Terry Francona released the starting lineup for Friday's Cactus League opener. It looks pretty much like we expected it to look, except I'm seeing Yan Gomes batting in the two hole. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I think he just wants to get – he's done that before early in camp. I think he wants to get his catchers as many bats as they can. Maybe get them an extra at bat because they're only going to be playing two or three innings. So two or three, maybe four innings. So I think he usually hits it, catches up early, up high in the lineup to get them an extra at bat. And, the exhibition season starting so early this year that, I think they just want to, get those guys in and out as quickly as possible, get them a couple at bats and then get them out of there and not risk anybody getting hurt this early in camp.
And just as we expected, Brandon Barnes and Drew Maggi are batting and playing in left field and second base respectively and batting eighth and ninth. Just pretty much as we expected, right?
Exactly. That's those are the two spots. I think Kipnis would have been playing if his back was okay. Barnes is a guy in camp on a minor league deal. He's played in Colorado and Houston. He's got some power, so we'll see. But this is good for those guys. This is this early start to the exhibition season. A lot of those non-roster guys that are competing for spots, like Rajah Davis is in there, Upton is in there in the starting lineup. All those guys are going to get a good amount of playing time this early in the year, early in the exhibition season.
And as we had spoken about earlier this week, Mike Clevinger gets the start on the mound, and he'll be followed by Ryan Merritt. And those are two guys who are, you know, fighting for a spot in that starting rotation. Merritt out of options, and you wrote about him this week and just his chances of making the roster.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Francona came right out and said, we don't want to lose this guy. You know, if we have a starter go down, he's probably next in line. But you can only fit 25 guys into a 25-man roster. And when you're out of options, you're out of options. I mean, I don't know what you do. You know, maybe – I don't think he would get through waivers if they you know, tried to get him through at the end of camp. I guess you could trade him or, you know, I don't know if you could – if he gets one of those you know, those 15-day injuries that you know, kind of conveniently come out of nowhere. But eventually you got to face the same problem. So, you know, I think all Merritt can do is pitch well and make the decision as tough as possible when it comes to, you know, the Indians deciding who makes the club and who doesn't.
One name we know will definitely not be making the club out of the non-roster invitees. Cole Sulzer came to camp and didn't tell anybody he'd broken a rib. What's the story with that? That sounds kind of unusual.
Yeah, definitely. You hear a guy with a broken rib, you think he got punched. You know, it was in a bar fight or something. But, you know, he came to camp with this. You know, I think the Indians knew. It sounds like the Indians knew that. He had hurt himself. The Indians said he hurt himself helping his parents move. He was lifting a box, tripped and fell and broke his rib. And, you know, he got to feel bad for the kid. His first big league camp, he pitched at Akron and Columbus last year. So he comes to his first big league camp, you know, at least maybe not a chance to make the team, but at least a chance to, you know, pitch against the, you know, top level competition, show the coaching staff what you can do, you know, plant a seed, and he breaks a rib, moving furniture or whatever it was. So that's a tough break, but that's a good spring training injury though. That has to go on the list somewhere.
That goes right up there with the Mark Wittens and the Glenn Allen Hills of the world with the odd injuries.
Definitely.
As far as you mentioned live batting practice, we've seen some video, a couple of guys, Corey Kluber got to pitch some live BP, Trevor Bauer did as well. Anything to take away from any of those appearances, or is this just the time when the starters are out there working on their stuff and it doesn't matter if they're giving up hits or not?
Yeah, I think it's important, you know, and I think the hitters are a little overmatched, you know, at this point. Especially when they're, you know, they step in and they're facing guys that have been, you know, thrown for a few, you know, they're thrown like 95, 96 miles an hour. I don't think everybody is going full go yet as far as pitchers, but, you know, there's not a lot of hard hit balls. And some guys, you know, some starters treat it a little differently than others. Some guys, you know, just kind of getting their work in and they let the hitters hit. And some guys are serious. So, like, you know, Tomlin, definitely, he threw yesterday, and he looked like it was the seventh game of the World Series. You know, he's thrown breaking balls. He looked really sharp, and the same with Kluber. You know, those guys they take it serious, and you know, and there's always there's always, you know, the hitters are always screwing around, laughing, and you know, trying to take these guys deep, their teammates deep. So it's interesting. But early in camp, the first couple of days of live BP, you don't see many hard swings.
Mm-hmm. As far as a guy you talked to earlier this week, and you had a feature on him, Tyler Olson, had a heck of a year as a rookie for the Indians last year, coming up after Boone Logan went down with a season-ending injury, and he really stepped in, made 30 appearances, and didn't allow a run. What are the expectations for Tyler Olson, and should we have expectations of another, you know, perfect season without allowing a run?
Yeah, I think he's going to give up a run here eventually, Joe. one of these games he's going to give up a run. Probably it'll be a relief too. But it was an unbelievable performance last year. You know, this guy came up, you know, twice, and from July 31st on, you know, he pitched through this, helped them, you know, during the streak. He was really even when, you know, Logan goes down and then Miller goes down, he was a lone lefty, you know, productive lefty. And he, you know, he got lefties and righties out. So he did a great job. The amazing thing is if you look at his transaction record, this guy went from Oakland, I think he went from the Yankees to Kansas City to the Indians, and he went – played for about four or five different teams in the span of like 2 years. You know, I don't think he didn't know if he was coming or going. And, you know, that's a hard way to play baseball. But, finally he found a home with the Indians. And I think he kind of established himself. He found a home here and, you don't know, how 1 year leads into another, but he certainly has momentum on his side and he's healthy. So I would think, he's got the right attitude. You know, he was his rookie year last year. He knows he hasn't gained any, nothing's guaranteed. And I think what he went through with all the waivers and trades, you know, he knows how fickle this game is. And I think, you know, you're always going to get his best effort.
Well, and one thing, you know, people are always asking about him, and one thing I always say is, you know a lot about a young kid like that by the way that a guy like Terry Francona, when he's asked about Tyler Olson, the way Terry Francona talks about him. And Terry Francona, I've never heard him say a negative thing about Tyler Olson in the time that he's been with the team. So if Terry Francona's opinion of Olson is that high, then you know, it stands to reason he should probably, you know, be with the team and be a part of what the Indians have in mind for 2018 moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. They're, you know, it's a great combination, him and Miller. You know, Olson can come in early. He can get lefties and righties out. Miller can come in the late innings. He can get lefties and righties out. It's just a good fit in that pen right now.
All right. Another thing you wrote about was the competition at catcher. I guess if there is a competition, which there really isn't, but there is. and then there's this kid waiting down I'm assuming AAA this year, but you know, Francisco Mejia is going to be right there as well. You've got Yan Gomes, you've got Roberto Perez. Both of them have, you know, plus gloves, plus arms, and both can hit the ball. What's the competition like for the Indians' number one catching position right now?
Well, you know, it was interesting because kind of unprompted, Francona said yesterday that each of them, you know, in their one-on-one meetings before, you know, camp starts, they each told Francona they want to be the number one guy. The indication was very strong they wanted to be the starter. Each one, and you know, until this point, you know, Gomes has always gotten the most playing time, but you know, you saw it kind of switch a little bit in September when Perez got more, you know, played more games, and he started four of the five games in the ALDS. So you know, that's a pretty good indication that you know his star might be rising here. And when you look at Gomes's numbers, I mean, he had one of his better offensive seasons, a bounce back season, and you know he's got a great arm. And they both handle the staff really, really well. So it's a good problem to have, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how Francona handles it. For instance, last year Gomes had always been Corey Kluber's catcher, but
right.
as the year went on, you know, you saw Perez catch him more and more. And, so that might be an indication that, you know, that of what they're thinking. But I don't think either one is going to, you know, really have a huge drop-off in at-bats, because if you look at their numbers last year, they were, as far as catching tandems go, you know, home runs, RBIs, slugging, they projected really well in the American League. They stacked up really well there.
The old adage as it relates to quarterbacks is, you know, if you've got two starting quarterbacks, you really don't have one. If you've got two starting catchers, is it damaging to maybe one to if you split the time a little bit more, are you sort of holding one of them back from having a breakout offensive year?
I mean, you could. You know, I think the problem arises not with the catchers so much, but probably with the pitchers. You know, I mean, do the pitchers like throwing to one guy more than the other guy? You know, that can be a problem. I've seen that happen before on clubs where, you know, the staff gets split and they're asking the manager, I want this guy to catch me. And, you know, I don't think Francona would allow that to happen. And I think both these guys, you know, they've been through this for the 2-3 years now, so they know how Francona operates. I think he'll be able to strike a happy medium, keep both of them happy, and then what's he do with Mejia then? So but I don't think having too much talent is ever a problem. And we've talked about it before. I think Mejia, I mean, if they need a hitter, and you know, Gomes and Perez are doing okay. But you know, maybe they're lacking at third base offensively. They could, or in the outfield, eventually they could make a move with Mejia and bring him up and help you know, take advantage of his offensive ability.
Do you think we will see Mejia in Cleveland before September this year?
I do. Yeah, I think there's a real good chance. You know, it's just the way the season works. Catchers always. You know, catching is such a volatile position. You can get banged up there. You know, we saw it a couple of years ago. Ramirez breaks his thumb. I think Gomes broke his hand. You know, so they take a beating back there. So, you know, that could really, you know, the door opens quickly if you're sitting at AAA and you're a catcher, I think.
Okay. As far as, you know, away from the field stuff, but it was announced that the Indians, along with the other Major League Baseball teams, are going to be wearing the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School caps to honor the victims of the school shooting from last week. Did any of the players say anything about that, talk about it, or what's the take around the clubhouse on just that horrific situation and, you know, just a little part of being able to do something to honor those victims?
Yeah, you know, Francona talked about that today. He said, you know, it's a small gesture on their part, on Major League Baseball's part, you know, considering what happened in Florida at the high school. But if it could help just one person that was involved in that, then it's a good thing. And, you know, he said it's, you know, nothing but good can come out of this. The Indians, you know, and every other team, every other big league team, honoring the people, you know, the people that were, you know, that tragedy, the people involved in that tragedy. So, he it almost sounded like he wished he could do more, that as a person and then maybe as Major League Baseball could do more. But he said this was a small gesture and he hoped it would be well received.
Before we let you go and get back to enjoying the balmy weather out there in Goodyear, Arizona, we saw this come across a couple of stories about this yesterday. Major League Baseball executives are floating the idea of allowing a team to bat their best hitter or let any three hitters they want to bat in the ninth inning as a way to make the games more exciting, I guess. I don't know, but
is it spring training games?
This is Major League Baseball executives have floated this idea that a manager could put his best three hitters as 1, 2, and 3 in the ninth inning if he's trailing in a game, and you know, make the closer from the other team have to have to strike out the top three hitters on the in the order. What, obviously, this must be the first you've heard of this, but what your initial reaction, I can tell, is probably pretty incredulous here.
And do the closers have a union? The closers, if they have a union, I think they file a complaint.
Well, what's to stop the manager from the other team then of bringing in his best pitcher? I mean, if you need three outs and you've got a starter who's scheduled to go the next day, why not just bring him? This rules proposed. These are we starting to try and legislate too much into this game? This is a sport in a game that's been around for 150 some years, and now you're trying to make all these changes to it. What do you think is going to it obviously it hasn't gotten laughed out of the arena here. If people are actually talking about it. But how crazy is that? I guess the philosophy is that Manfred said something along the lines of baseball is the only sport where your best player could be on the bench at the most critical time at the end of a game. You would never see LeBron James sitting in the last 5 minutes of a basketball game. You'd never bench Tom Brady for the final drive of a football game. So why not send, Mike Trout up to the plate if you can? It just flies in the face of everything that feels so natural about baseball.
Joe, I could tell you right now, there is no way that's going to happen. There is no way. I mean, they can talk all they want. There's no way that happens. I mean, that's the great thing about baseball. 1 through 9, anybody can be a hero. You don't.
Well,
how many times is Mike Trout going to hit? Like 7 times in a 9-inning game?
and it's not just that 1 through 9 anybody can get a hit, but it's that a good team is only as good as its weakest player in its 9-man batting order. You're only as good as your weakest link.
That's why you sign bench players. That's why you have pinch hitters. That's why a manager makes moves during the game. That sounds like roller baseball or something. Joe, there is something that, how a lot of spring training games end in ties,
right?
In the ninth inning when they run out of pitching. I guess there's a rule now this spring that if the score is tied 9-9 in the ninth inning, they'll play at least one more inning, and the guy that made the last out in the bottom of the ninth inning, he'll start.
Oh, tell me, they're putting a runner. It's a beer league softball rule. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
they're going to put a runner at second base to start.
Yeah.
And
start the tenth inning,
baseball.
But I think that is just for the exhibition season. And
right.
It's just because so many – I think fans get frustrated when a game, even a Kansas League game, ends in a tie. So I think that's one of the reasons they're doing that. But that other thing, that's crazy. I mean, they're going to kill every closer in baseball if they do that.
Well, and that's the thing is it's like I would think the players' union would have a lot to say about that
you would be
destroying closers and – Not just ruining their stats, but bringing in guys and blowing their arms out in games if you're trying to match up against guys like Trout and Aaron Judge in the bottom of the ninth inning. It's the most ridiculous thing. Hey, I'm not saying I was for it. I'm just saying I saw a lot of talk about this and this is you got pitch clocks, you've got mound visit limits, and now you're trying to let. I can understand trying. Baseball is already exciting. Anybody who's been at the World Series the last 2 years knows that baseball is absolutely thrilling when it's played at the highest level. There is no need to be changing these rules. It's ridiculous.
Jeez, oh man, that's unbelievable. But I'm glad you feel that way, Joe, because that's how I feel too.
Well, Paul, I don't want your head to explode while you're out there in the desert, and it sounds like the tumbleweeds are blowing once again. So we're gonna let you go. Looking forward to tomorrow afternoon, the start of games, not real games, and games that apparently will be decided by beer league softball rules if they're tied after 10 innings. So, you know, enjoy yourself your last couple of days out there before you head back for a break. We will talk to you again, hopefully, sometime after the game tomorrow. And until then, we'll catch you on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.
All right, Joe. Thanks, man.